Welcome to the Why Isn't It Working? Business and Tech Podcast, talking all things business and tech in the emerging and enterprise space. Here are your hosts, Carl Wood and Michael Hamilton.
All right, welcome to the podcast. Today, we're very happy to have Roisin O'Neill in with us, and of course, Michael Hamilton. Michael, how are you?
Oh, very good, very good.
Thank you. A bit of a detailed introduction for our guest. So Roisin is the head of the Australia region for Knowledgy, a mission which is basically connecting more people with a much more fulfilling area of career in technology and, you know, focusing heavily on upskilling people. And she comes with a heavy recruitment background, having previously worked as an associate director at Opus for the past 5 years prior to that. So Roisin, welcome aboard. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
That's excellent. So tell us a little bit about yourself. So obviously you've come from a heavy recruitment background, working directly, you know, in the people industry, now branching into Knowledgy as well. So do you want to give us a bit of a background on Knowledgy and what the intensive aim is there too?
Yeah, that's right. So I was working with Opus for about 5 years, and Opus are purely focused on tech recruitment globally. And so Knowledgy are sort of a sister company to them. We're partnered very closely with them. Knowledgy actually all came to be from off the back of a series of events that we actually ran in Sydney a few years back, which was all focused around diversity and technology, women in tech. And through all of that, we had a lot of conversations with, a lot of senior leaders in the industry, and talking about kind of the issue and why it was so difficult to hire women, to get people to stay in the industry. And through it all, like, we kind of figured with our expertise in the tech recruitment space, the area where we'd be able to have the biggest impact on that problem would be actually looking at the pipeline side of things. So knowing in the recruitment space that the digital skills gap is obviously an issue globally, and it's only getting worse with however quickly, everything's becoming more digital. And then coupled with the fact that even through that pipeline, there's not enough of it. And even in that, the sort of pipeline of females coming into that industry as well is still not really improving at any sort of exponential rate. Knowledgy really exists to solve those two problems, to close the digital skills gap and to encourage encourage diversity in that space as well. It launched 2 years ago over in the UK and launching this year in Australia. It's been going crazy over there, especially with everything that's happened with it this year. The uptake has been ridiculous. It's been so good. That's a little bit about us.
Wonderful. And I mean, the big area, like you mentioned, was a bit more from a diversity, sort of a D&I aspect as well, and bringing more sort of female candidates into the mix as well from a young age. And I mean, and Knowledgy is kind of a company that does that. I mean, Amy Golding, for example, she was the one who founded it. You've got a strong female leadership as well. So is it more catered, I guess, for reaching out to, you know, younger people coming through your universities or even TAFEs and trying to spearhead them a career into the tech industry as well?
Yeah, look, the background of the people who've been through the course is actually really, really diverse in and of itself. I think last year on one of the intakes, the youngest person on the course was 19 and they were fresh out of school. And the oldest person on that particular course was around 38, a career changer. But that's by no means sort of the limit, the cap on either side of things. We're just targeted at people basically who have no background in technology or have some background in it, but maybe don't have super relevant skills to where the industry is at and where the demand is right now. And taking them into the program and within 3 months, turning them into a great tech employee. So that's focused on giving them really relevant, up-to-date industry skills, but also focusing on the more well-rounded sort of professional skills aspect of that, as in what does make a good employee, not just focusing on teaching them how to code.
Fantastic. So is it just when we say technical skills, are we saying software development, are we saying data scientists, or what sort of skill sets are we looking at?
Yeah, our core product is a software development course. So over the course of 12 weeks, an introduction to code, mainly focused around JavaScript, HTML, CSS. Some framework around that as well with React, Firebase, Node.js. The reason we had selected those particular skills is obviously being in the tech recruitment space, like those are always the skills that were really high in demand and very difficult for companies to hire good people in that space for. So the course is kind of very frequently updated and targeted around what we're feeling in the market, the feedback that we're getting from clients who are hiring the developers at the end of it, and where we think we're setting people up for the most success. But like, you know, we also do really bespoke courses as well. So we've partnered up with businesses who we've built courses for, and that's been specific to their tech stack. We did a 16-week program with Deutsche Bank, for instance, and their stack was Java and Angular. So we built a course around that. You know, we've put together Python data courses for companies. Like we can kind of put together content for whatever people are looking for, but the core product itself has been focused around software development.
And do you think that this is really an evolution now kind of, you know, recruitment as traditionally been seen? So we did have a fantastic podcast with Robin Huggins, who's one of the leading tech recruiters out of Scotland a few weeks back. And he was sort of mentioning the fact that now it's not just a case of picking CVs, really recruiters need to be more involved in a very, you know, life-changing event, which is that job transition. Yeah. So is that now where you think, you know, recruitment's starting to branch out more into being offering not just, you know, placement, but also upgrading of skill sets and more sort of coaching, I guess, for the job hunter now?
Yeah. You know, I don't think it's necessarily specific to the recruitment industry to need to offer that sort of skill set. Obviously, for us, it's a huge sort of unique selling point. Like, we couldn't really be any more entrenched in that industry around talent, right? So finding it, creating it, upskilling it. So, you know, that for us is a huge value add on both sides of the coin, so that we can do all of that. But more so, I think this kind of upskilling and reskilling is, like, it is the way forward, but it's the way forward for everyone. You know, like, I think every business and every industry needs to take some ownership over the fact that, you know, everything's going digital and there's so many jobs that are being automated and people are going to be struggling for work in a few years. And, you know, COVID has only really accelerated a lot of those patterns that we're seeing in employment. And it's just, it hasn't created these patterns, these problems, but it's just accelerated them. And I think really for companies to be able to take quite a bit of responsibility where they have the ability to do so, and instead of making mass redundancies in areas where, you know, roles are being automated, that they can actually offer to keep those people on board and transition them into more tech related roles. And that doesn't necessarily just have to be like, okay, I've done a tech course and now I'm going to be a developer. But there are so many different ways that tech is obviously entrenched in businesses, that even just having those, like, that technical know-how within a business makes it a lot easier for them to relate to different departments, to innovate faster, to communicate better. It's important across the board that companies are doing it, you know.
Absolutely. And like you said, with COVID, have you guys seen an acceleration of intake during COVID, or sort of people reaching out during this period as well, worried about sort of that transition step?
Yeah, definitely. And it was a big part of why we've launched in Australia this year. So we haven't done our first course yet. That'll be starting on the 1st of February here in Australia. But throughout this COVID period, we've almost doubled our takes on a quarterly basis. Obviously, things are like, it's a little bit different over in Europe. I think the situation is obviously a little bit more intense. The cases are still going up. They're going through a lot more of a difficult period than I think we have been here in Australia. We've been quite fortunate. So that was a really big part of why we thought we should accelerate it now, just looking at those kind of hiring patterns, like looking at how much, you know, people, there's so much automation happening that it's a great time for people to start thinking about future-proofing their careers, right? Just thinking about, okay, if all of these things are happening now, like, it's not going to get any better. Like, things aren't just going to go back to normal. They need to start thinking about where they can get additional skill sets that will make sure that if anything like this ever happened again, that they're in a much more secure and stable position.
That's awesome. And which particular industries are you finding you're getting the highest demand for these resources that are coming through?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think over in everywhere really, I think like retail and hospitality globally have probably been two of the areas that have been hit the hardest. But also, like, retail is a really interesting one because obviously, like, brick and mortar stores have been on a decline for a really long time anyway. And it's another example of kind of this acceleration of patterns where stores are closing, people can't go in there. And any stores that have no online, no digital presence whatsoever have really, really struggled through all this period. And they're just like ramping up massively now and focusing on the e-commerce side of things. So that's one big area where actually there's a lot of really transferable skills for people in that space as well to be really valuable, to be able to go into a more technical focused role and also have all that knowledge of the industry and the consumer and things like that. So that's one really big area. And yeah, hospitality as well, where it tends to be a lot of younger people, obviously not just that, but where they're still relatively early enough in a career where maybe they're just like, okay, look, there's probably not going to be a future in this, or a very secure one. So now would be a good time to look at reskilling.
Okay, because what we've been finding the last couple of podcasts to date, that the soft skill conversation comes up across the board. Mm. Training on soft skills and so forth. How do you guys go about it? What do you do that's unique?
So we have a huge emphasis on that, right? And our sort of USP as a business, like, there's obviously other companies out there who are doing these like intensive full-time short courses and things like that to transition people into technology. Our biggest selling point is the fact that we're, you know, partnered by a recruitment company. So we have such an in-depth understanding of actually what makes a great tech employee. You know, we speak to hiring managers on a daily basis. We're putting people through interview processes. We're getting feedback on CVs, on interviews, on, and once they get onboarded, you know, how their first few weeks run, the things that they struggle with, the things that they do well. So throughout the course itself, we have probably about a full week's worth of just pure professional skills dotted throughout the course. And so that'll be a variety of things. You know, it'll be engaging with teams. It'll be how to take feedback. It'll be how to work through, like, the whole course is taught in an agile development workflow. So they have an understanding of how that process will work once they're integrated with a team. The last 4 weeks of the course itself, they actually get to work on a real life external client project, which is really cool. So in the run up to that, we'll have companies pitch ideas and pitch work into the team. So they get basically 4 weeks to work off these junior developers. And throughout that time, they get to interact with, like, an external stakeholder. They get to deal with the teams. So by the time that project is done and they're actually delivering it, they're doing a presentation, you know, they've got such a good feel for what it's actually like to build something in real life. Like, nothing's hypothetical. It's really cool. And I think that's the really big difference for us, is that our focus is so much on employability, right? We don't want to just shuffle through heaps of people through, teach them a few lines of code and send them on with their merry way. Like, you know, we want to make sure that they're coming out of this as a good tech employee. And so there's heaps of support ongoing for us afterwards as well. We've got constant contact with our coaches, with the rest of the cohort that they're learning with, all this sort of stuff that makes sure that even once they're through the course and they've landed their first job in tech, that we can make them be successful, you know.
Fantastic. I mean, Opus, where you have worked previously, and I guess Opus also has an oversight in regards to Knowledge as well. So Opus has got a very good reputation within the local market as being a very tech-specific recruiter. So in your eyes, I mean, what's some of the biggest issues currently facing the tech sector when it comes to that recruiting area? Is it a lack of talent? Is it, you know, recycling of the same talent in different areas? What are some of the common problems that you've seen in your experience?
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like, you know, there's a lot of the same patterns and themes that come up all the time, right? That every business is probably more focused and more worried about one thing over the other. Diversity is obviously one that comes up all the time, right? And we know with diverse teams and stuff like that, like, we know how big an impact, how positive an impact having diverse teams has on a business in terms of revenue, culture, retention, like, all these sorts of things. But they're struggling to actually implement, like, anything that will make a real significant difference, because there's just no pipeline there, right? So, like, you can do a lot of things around internal initiatives and things like your recruitment process and addressing unconscious bias and making your job advertisements more inclusive and things like that. But there's only so much you can do if there isn't, you know, that big a shift in the actual pipeline of females coming through. So diversity is obviously one really big thing. I hear people talk a lot about kind of brain drain, you know, that competitiveness with people being taken, like, you know, really highly skilled tech people being taken out of the market here and pulled over to America or to the UK, where they're getting paid either a lot more money or there's just a lot more opportunity in terms of the amount of, like, innovation and cool companies and the amount of investment in the startups that they get in those countries compared to Australia. The war on talent, I guess, here a lot, like, it ends up where you get to a point where it's just a salary war, right? Like, who's the biggest bidder? You know, there's, you know, when you've got such a finite amount of talent in the country and you're only losing it, like, as fast as you're creating it, it ends up that the same people are being pulled around from company to company just for an extra 20% on their salary year on year. And it makes it really difficult for smaller companies to compete, you know, which is probably one of the biggest things that I talk to some of the startups that I work with.
Interesting. Now, I imagine, obviously, you mentioned before from a diversity aspect, you're obviously quite passionate about, you know, more women in the IT workforce. So, I mean, what are some of the things that can be done there? Obviously, one thing is, you know, the feeder perspective of getting people from university and attracting them into the tech industry. So how would we do that, I guess, from a female's perspective? What would make more people, you know, I guess, want to come into the tech space? Is it a way of sort of, you know, remarketing and reframing IT and the work that's done? Is it a case of reaching out and engaging these people during their, you know, school and university years? What do you think are some of the tactics that can help to drive some of that demand?
That's an interesting question, and it's a really broad one. it's difficult.
Well, I can simplify and say, what would you do, you know, given the power then? So it's much easier.
There's a lot being done, which is the good thing. So, you know, like, people will talk about this, and, you know, it's as broad as it being a systemic thing, right? Like, the girls are encouraged to be girly when they're kids. And even if parents don't realize they're doing it, you know, pointing them in the direction of things that aren't science, maths, engineering, all those sorts of things. But, you know, like, the government, and there's plenty of private companies as well that are doing heaps to encourage, like, school age kids into being more involved in, you know, in STEM subjects. And even in universities, I know there's a big shift, like, there is a big focus. So, like, for industry, like, people like ourselves, there's probably not a lot we can do at that school age stuff. I think that's a lot more, like, that's a bigger issue. That's something that the government needs to address, and they are doing a lot around that. I think when we're looking at, like, business level, it is things like this, where you're looking at the people that you've already got in the business and thinking about how best you can utilize them, and giving people the opportunity to upskill, to retrain. I think I did a STEM uni degree, right? It was more about biology, like, that side of things. But even when I was in uni, I had absolutely no interest in going into a career in science, because all it meant to me was, like, I'd have to go and work in a lab for 12 hours a day and look at things that I under a microscope that I couldn't see with my own eyes. And, like, I had no concept of how business and science could actually interact, and, you know, where the crossover was in that. So I think at uni level, being able to introduce people to more broad subjects, looking at, you know, innovation grants, and seeing how people can get more involved in that side of things, so they know it's, like, it's more than just science. But also more, yeah, like, once people are out of school, like, getting them involved in things within a business that, you know, like, brown bag sessions that you might do on a weekly basis that involve people in tech teams, that, like, you know, the interaction of non-tech and tech teams, giving them an idea, maybe giving them the opportunity to go and learn in their own time, things like that, you know, just taking, like, the scariness of tech away from, it seems like it's something that nobody can do unless, you know, you've been doing science and maths and engineering since you're 9 years old, but, you know, it's a lot broader than that.
Well, reality, yeah, like you said, everyone kind of is a tech consumer in that way as well. And is this something, maybe, that if you look at a standard university degree, which might be anywhere from 3 to 5 years, depending on subject, a lot of people kind of feel locked in that, okay, now I'm committed, I've got to finish this off. I don't really have the time or, you know, I guess the opportunity to dabble in something else as well, to get a bit of a flavor and go, hey, this is something that interests me. That usually comes either after the fact or as a side project.
Sorry, what do you mean?
So if I'm locked in to say, for example, you said you did a bachelor's of science.
Yeah.
So at that time, you're kind of locked into that, right? There's an aspect that you can go and sort of do your own research. You can have a look at other things, but universities themselves will offer a fairly locked in course of 3 to 5 years. It's not as, you know, potentially diverse as having a look and saying, here's how it can be applied in a business sense and a tech sense. So there are more courses now, like Knowledge, that are offering more specialized learning paths.
Yeah.
So do you think that's something that maybe, you know, universities should also be looking at for people who, you know, necessarily might not specifically fit a particular degree?
Yeah, definitely. And, like, actually what I've noticed about the uni whole system here, as opposed to Ireland where I went, is in Ireland it is very fixed, right? Like, you at 17 make a choice and you get one offer then off off the back of what you said you're interested in, and then you've got 4 years and it's full-time, it's intensive, you don't have really much opportunity to do anything outside of that. But I have noticed here that everything feels a little bit more flexible, like you get quite a lot of time off in semesters, for instance, or you can defer semesters quite easily. Like I spoke to somebody yesterday who's interested in the Knowledge course, and she's 2 years into a commerce degree, but one of her friends is a developer and she started tinkering around with it and now she's super interested in it. So she's like, I'm just going to defer next semester and spend 3 to 6 months doing a tech course, then I'll go and finish my degree, and then I've got, you know, both of that. So I think it's something that here, at least, you know, students do get quite a lot of flexibility, and I can see again like the government pumping a lot of money and effort into like marketing these programs in a different way. I think it's definitely something worth looking at. Yeah,
definitely. We're talking to the universities the last couple of years and startups, and when I was talking to some of the girls going through the computer science degrees, they changed their degrees because they thought they wouldn't get a job when I was chatting to them.
Yeah,
that was one aspect, and that was halfway through, and as Carl mentioned before, obviously the demand on the other side is more important. Obviously from that perspective. So you mentioned startups before. Is that a big part of the demand that's come from you guys? Does that come through, or is it just enterprise and a little bit of startup here and there?
It's a combination. So with the more bespoke courses, they tend to have been more enterprise led. So that's companies who obviously have the time, the money, resources to be able to support large intakes of junior developers and make sure, because obviously in terms of hiring junior talent, you need to make sure that you've got that set up internally that means they're going to be successful long-term. You don't want to throw a junior dev into a team who's the only one there and they're on their own and they've got no one teaching them and holding their hand and stuff when they onboard. So for instance, Deutsche Bank was the first big program that we did like that over in the UK. And that was when they were closing down their investment business. So they were making quite a lot of currencies globally. So they ran an initiative which was half internal and half external. So the half of the internal team were retrainers. So they ran like an internal campaign around that, the opportunity to learn to code, and it was all funded by Deutsche Bank themselves. And half of the intake was external. So again, ran an external marketing campaign. And that was all focused around what they thought would make a great employee. And it didn't need to be somebody who had a background in computer science or maths or engineering. We were able to market that in a way that attracted actually a 50% intake of females, which is amazing. And that course then, so that course actually put through 12 people in that initial one, which completed about 9 or 10 months ago. And all 12 of those people came into the engineering team as junior developers, all completed the course successfully, and all stayed on with Deutsche Bank as junior developers. And 9 months on, all of them are still there. So that's just shown that, you know, the combination of that retraining and also taking people in externally has worked really well, and that they're about to start another one. So they're going to do another 12 all internal people retraining next year. And the big thing for them that they found is like they were trying really hard to make a big shift from being a finance company to being a digitally led company, which is obviously a big pattern, a big theme across the world. And the feedback from them was just the injection of life and culture, like the fact that they were able to build that culture by bringing the right people into the team, as opposed to battling it out to pay a lot of money for people who have been in the game a long time and have, you know, their headset in their ways, and, you know, they want to come in, do a job and get out again. You know, that shift in culture is the thing for them that's been like just amazing for them to witness. And even with their like senior engineers on the team, like it's been a breath of fresh air for them. It's given them a lot of opportunity to think about, you know, progression within their own careers, to give back to the community, to have an opportunity to mentor. So that from an enterprise perspective, the B2B stuff has been really, really successful. And then in terms of like candidates just putting themselves through the courses, students going through the course itself, it's been a real big combination in terms of where they've gone on to work. Then, you know, enterprise, mid-sized startups, fintechs, e-commerce, retail, a big selection. So it's not kind of siloed in one space where these like people coming off the course will be a great fit for. Really depends on the business and the person.
So at the moment, one of the big things used to be, I remember when me and Michael were back in the day when we first started in IT, you know, contracting was king. You know, it was like, you know, get in, get the, like you said before, the status quo stuff, get in, get the job done, out you go, go to the next one. Are you finding a bit of a shift nowadays where people want to work for a company that really values them and want to go into more of a full-time role? Like, is that trend starting to move away from, you know, traditional IT contracting to people who want to find somewhere to work and actually, like you said, have a much more values-oriented workplace as opposed to just getting in and getting out?
Well, they say that's a millennial thing, don't they? You know, they're constantly surveying people and asking them, like, you know, what their biggest driver is in a workplace and, you know, what matters to them most. And it's been quite interesting watching the shift in how those responses have come through over the years and, like, all that data that's been collected. And it used to be, I think, much more the case that people would prioritize money over most of the other stuff. But now it's a lot more about a sense of purpose and values and those sorts of things tend to top the pile, along with things like flexibility and things like that. So, I mean, I think it's a bit of a combination too, because yes, you're always going to have people who are you know, out and out contractors who, you know, enjoy a big challenge, getting their teeth stuck into it, solving a problem and then moving on to the next thing. And obviously the money is great. So there's always going to be a need. There's always going to be a demand for that. And there's always going to be the people who enjoy that side of things. I think it's interesting now that I think businesses are starting to shift away a lot more from that contractor model. Again, there is always going to be a need for short-term work, for instance, going through digital transformations or tech migrations, things like that, where having somebody with a really deep, intense knowledge and skill set is always going to be valuable. But I think for businesses who are conscious that, you know, the need for tech skills is growing and growing and growing, and it's going to be more and more entrenched within the whole business, that being able to build a core base of permanent people who know the business, who have a lot of IP, who really value the team members that they work with, who, you know, who want to innovate, who want to just, you know, stick with a company for a long time. Like, there's a lot of benefits to businesses for that, you know, cost, culture, retention, IP, like all that stuff. I'm just seeing like a big shift, I think, more from a commercial side of things to permanent teams.
That's fantastic. And with that in mind, we were talking to Robin from Scotland the other day, and what he mentioned was that with COVID, a lot more mothers can enter the workforce in IT who traditionally didn't have flexibility and time. Are you seeing that also in the enrollment, or is that something you saw in UK when you were with the rollout there?
So it's funny. Yes and no. So what you'll have seen is the people who've been hit the hardest with COVID throughout the world have been young people and have been women. And a really big part of the female side of things on that is because women tend to occupy a lot more jobs that are either part-time, because maybe they're the primary caregiver, or they tend to occupy industries that were just hit quite hard, things like retail and marketing. So, I mean, in Australia alone, like, there was a report, I think it was PwC, that said it's knocked back 6 years worth of female workforce participation improvements during COVID, right? So 6 years of improvements knocked off in a few months. So again, like, there's a really big opportunity there just in those sorts of numbers alone, in those sorts of patterns where women are going to be struggling to get back into the roles that they've already been in, to reskill and to upskill. So it will be a big focus for us going forward. But obviously there are still logistical issues around that, right? So our courses have always been full-time. And so 3 months is quite a big commitment for people to make if they do have kids at home, or if they do still have a family they need to support and they need to work at least part-time, you know? So we'll be introducing a part-time course next year as well, which we're really excited about, because we feel like, just, you know, talking a lot about what actually makes businesses successful and how they drive a culture that's positive in is that flexibility aspect. So being able to offer that from a course as well is actually really exciting. It's interesting you mentioned the uni stats earlier on as well around women switching out of courses in computer science, because even though IT and tech roles are the fastest growing industry, like, beating the workforce growth by like at least one percentage point year on year, computer science is still the one of the lowest, if not the lowest, completion rates in Australia. And so with this digital skills gap growing further and further as well, like, you know, they reckon there's about 6,000 to 10,000 people graduating computer science courses every single year at the moment. The percentage of those that are women varies between sort of 20% and 30%, so still mirroring what the market looks like at the moment. So it just shows that, like, the amount of roles that are growing, and the amount of people who are coming out of computer science degrees, like, there's no way that all of the roles that are going to be needed to fill in the next few years are going to be coming from computer science grads. So there's just got to be another avenue, you know.
No, I agree. And look, it was just as a sample group that was being interviewed by a startup I was working with. But what they said, they went off to do business degrees, accountancy degrees, economics. Yeah. They went into those fields. They found they felt comfortable and secure in getting a job in those fields. And that was a bit of a standout for me. I didn't realize it until I spoke with their own words. Man,
yeah. It's really interesting. It is, like, because you'd think that everyone's just like, especially if you've got the wherewithal when you're a kid to think, yeah, computer science degree, I'm going to do that. Either you're interested in it or you see a future in it. And then it's like, what's actually going wrong in the system there that's making people think that this is an insecure industry to work in? Like, I'd love to know, like, because obviously I've not done a computer science degree, but, you know, what happens in those couple of years that makes people think, I know, either I don't have a future in this, or the type chair that is in this is not suited to me. Like, I think the good thing about being able to do one of these short courses like this is that it's so industry relevant that, you know, people coming out of a four-year computer science degree will have a really strong and a really solid theoretical basis for technology. But they just need to be doing more, I think, in universities to make it more commercially relevant, like teaching things that are actually people are using in the market these days, getting them involved in real life projects, like maybe internships and stuff with companies that are looped into it. Because I think that would at least keep more people in the pipeline with it, you know.
I agree. And look, one thing I did notice for the same group was that majority of the ladies there had done something in high school with coding, with part of programs, and also mentoring younger students also. And I noticed that was a core feature that got them to stay longer at the course, in the computer science course, or even finish it, right? As Carl mentioned before, obviously there's a bigger play in the high schools to make sure when they do come into the course that they come and knock on your door and get the come through for 3 months. Would that be a core value that would, or in a dependency that would come into it, you reckon? High school involvement in
coding? Definitely. And like I said, like that's one of the areas I think the government are pushing quite a lot to make sure that schools are getting good STEM programs implemented, so that people are kind of like, you know, kids at like the age of 12 can actually get a feel for, you know, what coding is, like what technology is and what different careers look like it and stuff. So I definitely think that's valuable. And we, like, every fortnight we run online taster sessions in the afternoons, so that's like an hour and a half where one of our coaches will do like a quick interactive online code along. So they'll teach people to just create a really, really basic website using HTML, CSS and JavaScript, and at the end of the hour, like, they've got a little website that they've built themselves. Because I think it's just scary, isn't it? Like, people think, oh, coding, there's no way I could do that. But it's just like learning another language or whatever else. Like, you know, it's not as frightening as people think. And that was kind of namenology even came from, you know, like taking the tech out of technology, just to try and make it more accessible to other people. And what we've actually done is send out our next couple of taster sessions, the links out to that for heaps of year 12 students, because I think it'd be really fun for them to kind of look at it. And obviously they're thinking now about what their careers could be like, they're thinking about uni and stuff like that. So yeah, we want to try and give people a bit of an eye-opening experience of that age.
Fantastic. I guess a bit left field here, but if you're putting someone in from a development point of role, do you think that now the CV is kind of antiquated and they really should be building a bit of a personal portfolio website to showcase their skills? Do you think that's something that might give them a bit of a leg up if they're applying for a job?
For a junior, 100%. That's all they've got, isn't it? So so that's one of the things that we do with the students coming through the course. Everything that they work on goes onto an online portfolio that they can then show to prospective employers and talk them through it and all that sort of thing. As you get more senior, and especially in a market that's as small as it is, I guess, it maybe doesn't become as important. I think if you can see that somebody's been working at Tyro Payments, Afterpay, Atlassian, you know, you might not necessarily get a great feel for their portfolio. You'll have a conversation with them and they'll be able to articulate some of the stuff, and they've worked for really well-respected brands and things like that. But it's just a bit of a combination, I guess. Like a lot of clients that we've worked with and placed people on, they'll always be happier if they can have a look at somebody's GitHub account and see some examples of the code they've done before.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your personal opinion, how long should a CV be? Like, you know, what's a really good sort of way to make an impression?
Yeah, really short. Like 1 to 2 pages. And I know it can be hard as well. With especially the more senior you are, the more experience you've got, want people to know what great experience you've got. But that's where that combination, right, of an actual CV and a portfolio comes into play, because if you can give somebody at a glance really good snapshot of who you are, where you've been, what you've done, and you can link them into something like a GitHub or a portfolio page where they, if they're like, you know, their attention has been caught on that first snapshot, then they can start digging into the nitty-gritty of what you've done before. But you know, like, nobody has time to sift through 11 pages of super detailed lists of what project you're on and who you worked with and what technology you used, even if you only touched it for a few minutes and things like that. But yeah, the best CVs I always see are one page, and they're able to really sell who a person is and what they're all about.
And do you also recommend, if they do have a bit of time throughout the week, maybe 1 or 2 hours, donate some time to a startup? Maybe do some coding or do some work in there. Would that help on the CV if they had that?
For juniors, 100%. And like, you know, every company is different too in terms of what they're looking for. But again, that's always just one extra sort of point, because, you know, nobody wants someone who's just like a clock in, clock out kind of person, especially with technology, which is all about innovation and it's changing all the time. And, you know, you need to be able to work well with teams and stuff. And, you know, if you're the sort of person where they can see on your CV that, you know, you're always tinkering, you're always learning, you're always doing stuff for the love of it, not because you have to, because you're getting paid to do it 9 to 5 or whatever else. So being able to have a little portfolio of side projects, or, you know, maybe it's something like if you're more senior, like mentoring juniors or hosting meetups or doing certifications or, yeah, contributing your time to a startup. It doesn't matter what it is, but I think those things just really talk a lot about how you feel about technology and the sort of effort, I guess, that you'll bring to a role to make sure that whatever you're doing is as great as it can be.
No, definitely. And for myself personally, looking at other CVs in the past, when someone's worked in a startup, it's risen to the top. I look at that and I take that seriously. So, yeah, they've donated
not
their
easy
time.
Startup, is it?
I find it really good use of their time, and it really shows that they've showed initiative. It's great.
Especially Well, is there anything you guys have seen, like, in terms of, you know, obviously you're very well entrenched in the market, you've been in the space for a long time here in Australia, but even talking to people during these podcasts, like, is there anything that's coming up as a common theme around, like, what are people worried about, what are they thinking about for the next few years?
I think the uncertainty aspect definitely has hit a lot of people. So, I mean, we've been focusing primarily in APAC, but we've also had some international guests who, I guess, like you mentioned before, based out of Europe, are a lot more, there's a lot more uncertainty now due to a second wave fear coming in. The biggest thing that seems to have risen to the top is the people that can clearly articulate their ideas, that can show their value and have those interpersonal soft skills on building relationships and focus on them, seem to be the ones that, you know, are always in demand. Like you mentioned, the technology aspects are interesting. If we look at Australia, if you look at the computer science degree, like we mentioned earlier, it's fairly antiquated. You'll spend 4 years learning, you know, a C-based language, things around memory management, you know, traditional heuristics in computer science. But when you tailor that to the market, and as you probably know, Roisin, you have people that are looking for things around React frameworks, around, you know, Angular, around, you know, DevOps, things like Kubernetes, and none of that is really explored in the computer science. So you'll come out with a degree and then you'll need to kind of buffer up those skills, which you should be able to do a lot more quickly based on you having that experience. But there seems to be a big gap between university exit to job entry and expectations. And this is where, you know, clever operators will, during that university period, get out there and understand that, because they're reading the market, they're understanding, as opposed to those that are putting, I think, blind trust in their degree. The other areas that you touched on earlier are very true. The skill shortage, especially in areas around AI, statistics and data analytics, are quite large at the moment within Australia. And the pathways there, again, are not so clear because there is a bit of a brain drain and more incentive for people to move, you know, for capital funding or VC funding, whatever it might be, straight overseas. So Australia has a unique position where we have a lot of smart people that either look, you know, offshore for further opportunity, or if they do stay here, they're working in a much more restricted market, like as you said, where the cream rises to the top and everyone else is kind of fighting out for the rest of those positions as well.
Yeah, that's why I think it's so valuable that, like, it's so important, like, especially for somewhere like Australia, because for Australia to stay competitive globally, like, technology is the only way forward. And, like, Australia performs pretty poorly when it comes to the amount of like VC funding it gets, like, because it just makes sense, right, for people to put their money elsewhere. And even Australians who have great ideas, who want to innovate and start businesses, it's easier for them to do it in other countries to go somewhere else and do it. So, like, being able to actually grow more and more of our own talent here and make it a more appealing place for investment, make it an easier place for businesses to build local teams, like, it can only long term do good to the economy as a whole. And especially with, like, everything happening with COVID and migration now, like, we've relied so heavily here on skilled migration for the tech sector, and, like, we have no idea when that's going to come back. So, like, they already think, like, so I think even the introduction of the 482 visa over the 457, which made things significantly more difficult and more expensive for businesses to hire talent from overseas, like that dropped off, I think, at least 30% of people on those visas in the tech space. And then, like, looking at, like, permanent resident visas and stuff like that, which, like, people just aren't obviously going to be coming here now for at least next year. Like, we can't even open the borders, we think, next year, but then we don't know how that carries on, you know, in the years to come after that. So we can't look to overseas anymore if we want to build local teams. We have to think about where we can do it here in different avenues, and whether that's building your own, you know, internal retraining programs, whether that's looking to other businesses like Knowledgy to assist you in doing it, you know, or even if it's just, you know, having more of an open mind to like where people are learning technology, where they're getting those skills from, because there can be a bit of a snobbery around, like, only level with computer science degrees. You know, having a bit more of an open mind where there's always going to be a need for those people, those much more theoretical and, like, that sort of core foundation and knowledge. But, you know, complementing that with people who have some more real world experience, who have industry knowledge, who have consumer knowledge, and then giving them the skills to work alongside those other more traditional tech background people. It's really the only way forward, I think.
No, it's a good point. As Carl mentioned, data is one of the big ones. And a lot of people we've talked to raise the point that, yes, you can do software development, you can get a job and sit in the team. But when you're using data, you've got to come in and build models, and you've got to go and challenge the business and challenge your client or your employer when it comes to how you use data. So that's what we're finding is the skill set, obviously, to challenge and be assertive in how to do that. But how do you do that when you're young? It's not necessarily as practical as you think it is. So those are the type of things that we see that are there in the market using data science, huge. So having those skill sets is very important. Yeah. But yeah, if you guys are expanding out into data science, I recommend it, definitely. It's one of the big ones. I know I talk about it a lot with a lot of people in the private sector also. So yeah, something very common.
Yeah. That's for us. Yeah, we've just got our Australia coach on board, and he comes from a data consulting background. He used to work at Serbian for a while and such. So he's really keen to build out that, because he obviously knows, you know, what a demand there is for it. And again, yeah, it's always going to be interesting, because, right, you need to be able to think commercially to use data properly, don't you? And if you're building, you know, models, and if you're building software that can actually make sense of it in a way that's not just theoretical, then more the better. And obviously data science is a bit of a contentious, like, term anyway in Australia, isn't it? Like, I think a lot of people say it and because they think it's cool. And then people don't want to say it because they don't want it. And then people don't want to say it because they don't want it to look like they're just saying it for the sake of it, even when they actually know what they're talking about and stuff. It's funny, yeah. So, like, there's heaps of opportunity in the data space. It's huge. But that, and like that, even, and obviously not to harp on about the diversity stuff even more, but it's like the other really important reason why like companies need to think really seriously about, you know, building properly diverse teams and technology is that everything we do now already so deeply entrenched with tech, and like that's obviously only going to get more involved with our lives. And the people who are building that technology need to be representing everybody. You know, we can't just have the same type of person, the same type of mindset building anything. Like, and you know, you hear all these really dark horror stories about AI and bias and things where ways where that's already gone really, really wrong. But it's not just about the really kind of dark AI stuff. It's like, it's literally everything. It's like even just using an app on your phone, or, you know, like how products are built for people. Like you need to have, you know, every one of your consumers represented in how you build those solutions, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I think considering 80% of people who buy something online are actually female, and most marketing campaigns are actually driven towards the audience that buys. And this has traditionally been something back from the 50s where, you know, where it was traditional, women would go to work, women would stay at home, and that advertising was targeted at people who would spend money. Now with a boom of online, you know, consumer goods, that there's a much heavier trend now, I guess, for female purchasing online. So you're right, it makes more sense to have people designing the experiences for the target market, because at the end of the day, they're going to understand the target market if they are the target market as well. So I think you're absolutely right. Roisin, it's amazing, and thank you very much for being on board today. We are very, very happy to see companies like Knowledge come on board to start to bridge that gap between, you know, people who are exiting university or wanting a career change and not knowing where to start. So I think it's fantastic that a structured program has been put in place to help coach, refine, and not just on, like you said, on the development aspect, but also look at the soft skills as well, because as we mentioned earlier with Michael, it's something that does pop up quite a lot in the podcast to be something of high importance. So thank you very much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure for myself and Michael, and we'll have to have you back on again. We are planning to have a bit of a recruitment / progressive roundtable, which I think talk to, you know, friends like Daniel as well, get them on board, and we'd love to have you back on board to get your feedback on that as well.
Amazing. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Wonderful. Thank you.